The board has returned from recess. It is 10:35. We'll do a roll call of members and staff to ensure everybody is present. Dr. King?
Present.
Dr. Bastillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Greer? Mr.
Here.
Greer, thank you. Mr. Barton? Let the record reflect Mr. Barton is, Mr. Barton is joining. There's Mr. Barton. Great timing. Mr. Barton, we're doing a roll call after returning from break.
I have excellent timing.
Yes, you do. And you are here. Wonderful. Ms. Richardson? You're muted.
Present.
Ms. Sinish?
Present.
Ms. Crowley? You're muted.
Present.
And I'm Judy Chepius. We are all present, Mr. Harris included, and Dr. Bastillo, meeting's yours.
Great. Okay, so we are back, there are no items under number 8 on the agenda, so we'll move down to number 9, which will be to complete the initial reviews. We have already read our script here. Do I need to reread that, or are we good?
Dr. Bastillo, you may want to reread it since we're...
Sure. No problem.
Thank you.
This is a time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 4 more cases for the board to consider. The matters will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all the cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I am the board's chairperson. Now I'll ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Dr. King?
Present.
Dr. King, board president, professional member. Mr. Leone?
Giovanni Leone, professional member, board secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not to take the time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior will be removed from the meeting. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. And the first case before us today is 2337 Ryan McGinnon, PT. And we'll get an overview of the case, please.
Yep.
Thank you.
And I don't believe either Mr. McGuigan or the complainant, Dr. Kill, is on the call. I could be mistaken. But at any rate, this complaint alleged that Mr. McGuigan falsified a patient medical record and failed to timely complete his clinical documentation. He did receive a copy of the draft investigative report and submitted an attestation from his supervisor as a supplemental response, which was included in your review materials as Exhibit 4. The potential violations cited are ARS 32-2044-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violations of this chapter or in the practice of the profession, and ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records as it relates to R-424-304 adequate patient records. This case is for your review. Mr. McGuigan, are you in the meeting today? Or Dr. Kill?
Mindy, I don't see either listed in the
I didn't either. I'm just checking
at this point.
Thank you. Does anyone have any thoughts on this case, or do we need to move it forward?
This is Mr. Barton. I, having reviewed the case, I don't see, and again, I'm speaking as a public member, but I don't see anything concerning there. My inclination is to dismiss.
I feel the same way.
So, bolstered by Mr. Leone, then I would move that we dismiss this case and take no action.
Second.
Any other thoughts? I would agree with both of you.
The only discussion I have is this is appearing to be a constant theme that we're having in board meetings, and I don't know how to distinguish between the cases where I think there's, you know, outright fraud where somebody's claiming to treat a patient and not. And this one, while similar to some of the other cases, I see the differences in this one. This one does appear to be an honest mistake as opposed to somebody not doing the work. But, you know, it really, the Callahan Declaration or unsigned letter that we have is really troubling because they're saying, yeah, he's struggling with billing and we're still billing it. And that's troubling to me. But I don't think I need to take it out on this licensee. Just the thought.
Yeah, I agree with that concern, but I don't. I think the reason I'm leaning towards taking no action here is exactly what you're saying. I don't. As I look at this, it doesn't look like this is a situation where I can point at anything and say there was billing for work that was not necessarily done. It looks like there seems to be some errors on time and completing documentation, but they look like. It looks like I can match them up when I kind of do the math. And so I share your concern that there's, you know, these problems with the records, and that we consistently see this. Just in this case, I don't know that this licensee, I just don't see anything that I think we need to take out on this licensee. So that's kind of where I am, but I share your concerns.
And I guess the difference on this one is it appears the work was done, whereas some of the other ones, there's highly doubt, or at least it's not even a dispute, that the work was not done.
Yeah.
So.
That That was my thought on this one as well, is that I do feel that the work was done. It's just hard to get people to do their notes in a timely manner.
That's an issue not limited to the physical therapy profession.
So noted. Any other discussion?
Are you ready for the question?
I think we are.
It's been moved and seconded to dismiss case 2337, Ryan McGuigan, PT. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Then we will move on to case 2352. Garrett Riley, PT. Is Mr. Riley on the call?
Yes, I am.
Great, thank you. And is the complainant on the call?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right, can we get a brief overview, please?
Yep, thank you. My case. Complaint 2352, Garrett Riley, PT, was filed on June 14th of 2023 by Dr. Julie DeGuider, who was Dr. Riley's supervisor at the time. She alleged documentation and billing deficiencies, inappropriate supervision of PTAs, substandard care, and potential safety issues in the practice of physical therapy. As supporting documentation, Dr. DeGuider included a request for re-review of complaint 2261, also filed against Dr. Riley. In that case, the board had completed a preliminary review in February of 2023 and voted to take no action. In this complaint, Dr. DeGuider, in 2352, Dr. DeGuider included supplemental information that was previously reviewed by the board in complaint 2261. However, she did provide new information for the board to consider. In her submission, four of the medical record reviews were greater than 4 years old and could not be considered per ARS 322943. Those medical records were removed from the board's review materials. The board then completed a preliminary review of case 2352 at your July 2023 meeting, and you voted to open a case at that time. The respondent, Dr. Riley, was placed on approved medical leave in May of 2022 and underwent evaluation and treatment for a previously undiagnosed medical condition. He was released to work in November of 2022 and has been working since January 2023. He continues to be under active medical management for his medical condition. The information submitted via complaints 2261 and its subsequent 2352 was from a period before Dr. Riley was placed on medical leave. Dr. Riley received a copy of the draft investigative report and provided a supplemental written response as Exhibit 7. He also submitted a list of completed continuing education since the complaint was filed and is included as Exhibit 6. Dr. DeGuider also submitted additional statements on January 17th of this year, and those were also included in your review materials. Potential violations for the board to consider: ARS 322044, engaging the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist; ARS 322043, supervision patient care management; and ARS 322046, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter and rules. ARS 322044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, and ARS 322044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records, and as it relates to R424-304, adequate patient records. This case is for your review.
Great, thank you. If at any time, Dr. Riley, that you feel that you would like to go into executive session if we need to discuss your medical condition, please feel free to ask us to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like to make any opening statements at all?
I would. I'd like to read a brief statement.
Great.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to address the board. After reviewing my charts, I do recognize significant deficits in documentation and some supervisory deficits as well. At the time of this documentation, I would like to emphasize that I had undiagnosed attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and increasing levels of anxiety that further exacerbated my ADHD symptoms. This combination was noted by both my diagnosing neurologists as impacting my performance at work. At this time, I was also actively improving my productivity. I had recognized the instances of me signing incomplete charts during this time frame, but I hadn't realized how bad it had gotten. Both my speech therapist and my second neuropsychologist pointed out that I make more errors when I hurry. I am fully compliant with my ADHD treatment regimen and feel strong at work on my medications. I also continue to get positive feedback from both my supervisor and my colleagues. I am actually pleased in some ways that the investigation has moved forward, as it has allowed me to see my charts and recognize the areas I need to improve in. I have already begun implementing changes in my current documentation based on deficits recognized in the chart review. I am ready to answer any questions you might have about my practice or the chart review. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you very much. Dr. DeGator, is there anything new that you would like to add that we haven't already seen?
Good morning. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to clarify. I would like to state that I don't have a lot of additional information, as most of it was provided in the written statement on January 17th, I believe. I also would like to say that this is the first time I have actually heard Dr. Riley admit that he has actually made mistakes or had deficits in his documentation or his care. I would also like to clarify that I have conflicting information on the time of his diagnosis of his ADHD. And my greatest concern is that physical therapists are licensed to work as independent providers, and many work in a setting with no supervision. This case goes from 2016 approximately to 2021, where Dr. Riley was working on his own, and he may currently be under supervision, but there's no way that we can guarantee he's going to remain in a supervised environment. And I have concerns that how are we going to ensure that Dr. Riley does not repeat his inadequate, unskilled patient care and unlawful documentation and billing at another facility in the future, if he's not under continued supervision by another physical therapist. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Riley, would you be willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I would.
Great. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Can you hear me okay? Dr. Bustillo, can you hear me?
You were breaking up.
Okay. I'll hold my question until we get out of these now.
Okay. I'll ask a question here, Mr. Riley. How do you feel like your practice has changed, and what do you feel like you've learned from this experience?
Several things. I definitely, like I said, I had recognized an issue with assigning incomplete charts at the time. I hadn't realized how bad it has gotten. I am currently double checking my notes just to make sure that I didn't forget anything. I definitely have noticed that on my ADHD medication, there's much less instances of that, although I am still double checking. I'm definitely focusing on supervising physical therapy assistants properly. I've only had a limited ability to do that because I'm only working PRN, so I'm not I'm only the supervisor physical therapist when I'm on site. But I've definitely been trying to do that more thoroughly and document it more thoroughly.
Okay. Do you feel comfortable with your practice being supervised?
Do I feel comfortable with my practice being supervised?
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. In fact, I believe one of the problems was when I first started out at Hope Healthcare Center, I had a supervisor president, but shortly after I started, he actually moved into an acting director role, and then he left, and I was alone for 4 years. And I recognized not having someone to mentor or bounce ideas off definitely made it more challenging. I am not planning on applying for a job unless there is another physical therapist present, because I believe that as I kind of rebuild my practice up, I haven't been practicing for a year and a half, that it will be important to be able to discuss issues with another physical therapist, bounce ideas off them, and preferably I would like to have a supervisor just to kind of guide and mentor me.
Perfect. Thank you.
Mr. Riley, what setting are you practicing in right now?
I'm currently at a skilled nursing facility.
Okay. And about how many therapists are usually there working with you?
Usually only one physical therapist, and often I'm filling in for him. So he's often not present when I'm there. I have had an open discussion with him about my notes, you know, anything missing, any issues. In fact, I think he's kind of getting sick of me asking him. But I have had that open dialogue with my current supervisor, and I have been seeking guidance and any suggestions.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Riley, it's Kelly King. A question. Are you in, and if you're not comfortable answering in general session, we can move to executive, but are you in counseling or therapy or working out strategies other than medication and functioning with ADHD as a healthcare professional?
I think I caught most of that. I am not currently in counseling. I just completed my second neurologist. Basically, I went to get a second opinion, and I've completed that. I submitted, I believe, my third neuropsych eval. Unfortunately, I don't have a full-time job, so I don't have the best benefits, so I can't afford counseling right now. But I was doing counseling during this period that was that you guys are currently discussing. I did do 8 or 9 months of counseling, and I am fully compliant with my treatment regimen. I also try and manage my anxiety and attention deficit disorder with health and wellness. I'm getting regular exercise. I'm eating healthy. I'm trying to get enough sleep. I do Qigong and meditation for relaxation. And so I am addressing the issue that way as well. And I should add too, once I return to full-time employment and have better insurance, I will likely be restarting counseling.
Great. Thank you. I do see your hand, Dr. DeGuider. I'd like to finish some questions here with Mr. Riley first. Have you taken any specific documentation classes or billing and coding classes at all?
I took the Arizona documentation class in 2019, I believe, 18, 19. And I did submit, I haven't taken any officially licensed CEU classes, but I have taken some unofficial classes provided by my employer about documentation. In fact, I believe I voluntarily took almost every single one they offered, because I did want to make sure that I was documenting correctly. And also I hadn't been in the SNF setting for a while, so I wanted to make sure that, you know, I had all the appropriate information in my notes.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Riley? Dr. DeGator, what would you like to say?
I would like to ask how Dr. Riley is going to ensure that he actually progresses a plan of care accordingly. So one of the other main deficits in the multiple patients that I have had to review is that the same exercises were performed for almost all the same type of diagnoses with little variation. They were not progressed over time, so the same exercises would be performed 9 months later. And I don't work in a skilled nursing facility, but I do work in an outpatient facility. And we are independent providers that have to give plan of cares based off of diagnosing that are unique to a patient. And I just have not heard any concerns yet about some of the harm that were provided to patients, in my opinion, nor the justification of why he was not progressing his plan of care. I'm glad that he's recognizing that his documentation was not meeting standards. But that does not justify patients that come back that still have impairments that are long-term now because of his poor care over a very extended period of time.
Great, thank you. Any other concerns or questions at this point?
Mr. Riley, it's Kelly King. I apologize if I'm breaking up. I believe the last time you were in front of us, you said that your supervisor reviewed your document. Is that still occurring?
Sounded like she had asked, is your supervisor reviewing your documentation still?
Excuse me, what was that?
It sounded like Dr. King was asking if your supervisor is reviewing your documentation.
My current supervisor?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I was referring to earlier. You know, I've been asking him, you know, questions, and often I will be called in like on a weekend and I'll cover for him and I'll do evaluations and then he'll be treating those patients. So he is, or I will be treating his patients. So he is actively reading my documentation and going from there. Would this be an appropriate time for me to address Dr. DeGator's comment?
Sure.
So I do recognize the deficit in my documentation of my therapeutic exercise. I did not do a good job of describing the adjustments made to specific exercises. I I've taken several continuing education courses that have talked about altering variations of therapeutic exercise, and I'm a big believer in that. So if I prescribe a bridge, for example, I may try, if this is like the first time I've done it with them, an isometric bridge, a mini bridge, alter the velocity of the bridge, all to fine tune the exercise, to what I'm trying to address in the patient. And I definitely did not do an adequate job communicating that on my note and documenting it. But it's not just the same three exercises. I believe the patient that Dr. DeGator is referring to is a patient that was having a lot of reoccurring pain. And so I did at times go back to the lower level pain addressing exercises in an attempt to kind of address that patient's flare up. With that particular patient, I was having a hard time progressing. And so I was doing a lot of the same low level exercises with them over and over, but I was attempting to progress. And I think that's a gross generalization that I was doing the same exercises 9 months later. I think the notes will show that I attempted other exercises, that is an oversimplification. Thank you.
I do not believe it's an oversimplification, as this is not referring to one patient. I have stated, and I'm told not to restate too much, that this is repeated, extensive, and if you would like to see every low back pain patient that has been seen by Dr. Riley, I can show you the repetition in his documentation. It is not just a documentation deficit. And I have heard this objective from these patients who have returned to me and then progressed fine and are now functional. So if it was just a documentation issue and it was just one patient, I honestly probably would not have wasted my time in presenting this to the board.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. So how do the board members feel we should proceed with this?
I definitely think that there needs to be some additional education in regards to documentation, you know, for sure. I applaud Mr. Riley for, you know, taking advantage of any courses that his employer has, but I'd like to see something a little bit more official that, you know, kind of dives a little bit deeper into some of these things. So I would say that that's probably one step I'd like to see, you know, take place.
Good. Dr. King, your thoughts?
I hope you can hear me. So the complaint and the patient care came during an undiagnosed time to the medical condition for Mr. Riley. He's since been diagnosed and is now treated and has supervised practicing in a group setting where he's got someone watching him and documenting. So I think it's unfortunate and sad. Dr. DeGator is sad about the patients that were treated when he was thought as healthy as me. But it sounds to me like he's gone to great lengths to get himself into a place where he is a healthy practitioner.
And I'll say, you know, to echo Dr. King's statements, I am a little torn on this case because you know, I see some concerns here, you know, and that obviously is something I think we need to address. I think there needs to be some more education, but I do, you know, I also see the good in this. I see that this, you know, this licensee seemed to recognize that he had a problem. He seemed to get the help, and I think that he needed, and it sounds like there's not concerns now. Those are all good things that I think we as a board ought to encourage somebody going out and getting that help. I wish it had happened sooner, you know, and I wish that this had been recognized earlier, but undiagnosed medical conditions are difficult. So that's kind of where I am on both sides of this. But I think I'm glad that he got the help that he needed. I'm glad that there's been some assessment of that at this point. I do think we need to do something about the previous deficiencies that we do see in these records.
Do you have any thoughts, Mr. Greer?
I tend to agree with Dr. King on this. It seems to be vendetta is a too strong a word, but it does seem to be a personality conflict between the complainant and the licensee. But, you know, I echo what Mr. Barton, Dr. King said.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. I feel like it's very hard to recognize your own deficiencies when you're the sole practitioner in a clinic. And you're just trying to get the work done. And so during that period of time when he was the only person there, I think it's truly, truly a challenge. I'm grateful that he's been able to take the steps that he's needed to improve his health and improve his practice. And he has made some positive steps. I think Mr. Leone's on a very good track here for trying to provide some remediation to further improve documentation and make it be up to standard. Is there any other coursework or anything specific that you'd like to see, Giovanni?
It'd be nice to see something in regards to, you know, just to try and, you know, do something with the concerns that it sounds like Dr. DeGator has in regards to progression of patients. And I'm just not sure how many courses are out there that are specific to just that aspect. You can look at different courses for like different body parts, different conditions, things of that nature, but there's nothing that's just going to be one specific, here's how you progress a patient.
Right. Yeah. That part's very true.
I wonder if there's there with, around like the clinical thing.
What was that?
I wonder if there's a course around more like clinical decision making for the physical therapist.
Yeah, I mean, if there is, that would be great.
In my experience, I do believe there are courses out there that talk about clinical judgment. It is diagnosis based typically. It isn't like Mr. Giannani said, it's not going to be one all-encompassing, but it'll be diagnosis specific.
That might give, you know, the information that we're looking for, even if it is diagnosis specific, it's still information that can likely be applied to anybody.
Would differential diagnosis be a part of that? I do know that there's courses on differential diagnosis.
Yeah, differential diagnosis would probably incorporate some of that stuff into it. But again, they're going to be specific towards certain conditions. It's probably not just a general differential diagnosis course.
Dr. King had made a statement, but I don't see it in the chat. It was regarding geriatrics, clinical decision making in geriatrics is what she's recommending.
I do like that one specifically because it does encompass this current practice situation.
Yeah.
So a geriatric course would be very appropriate, I think. It doesn't.
Yeah, I'm looking in MedBridge right now, and they have one specifically geriatric differential diagnosis for 1.75 hours.
I believe there's a variety of providers that have various differential diagnosis opportunities. At least in my previous life, that was a topic that was fairly common.
All right, so we're kind of looking at a non-disciplinary order for continuing education here, documentation for 3 hours, Giovanni.
I was going to say six, but
okay, I can do that.
But I would like to see him take courses that go over the evaluation, the treatment. Mm-hmm. It's progress notes, discharge notes, just kind of everything. And I feel like you can easily get to 6 hours with that.
Okay. And then 6 hours of geriatric clinical decision.
I would just say probably maybe 6 hours of just some sort of clinical decision making, including geriatric.
Okay.
I just don't know if he's going to be able to find 6 hours of just pure geriatric.
Right.
Decision making.
And so would that also then include that differential diagnosis class that you were talking about?
Yeah, some sort of geriatric differential diagnosis, mm-hmm. along with, you know, any other differential diagnosis.
Any other thoughts on that or where we should go? Okay, so we'll move that we offer Mr. Riley a non-disciplinary board order for continuing education for 6 hours of documentation and 6 hours of education that can include differential diagnosis and clinical decision making that does have a geriatric component to it.
Second.
And just for clarification, we're ordering it, not offering it, correct?
Correct. Thank you, Josh.
And what was the time frame?
6 months. Any other discussion? Okay, I think we're ready here.
Okay, in case 2352, Garrett Riley, PT, it's been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education to include documentation for a minimum of 6 hours and clinical decision making and or differential diagnosis, including components for geriatrics, for a minimum of 6 hours. Continuing education shall be completed within 6 months. The courses must be pre-approved and may be completed online and do not count towards renewal requirements. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. The board will be in touch with you, Mr. Riley, on the steps here and how to get your courses pre-approved.
Thank you.
Dr. DeGator, your hand was raised. Do you still have a comment?
I just thank the board for reviewing this, and I'm grateful that Dr. Riley has admitted to some of his deficits, because that has been honestly the biggest struggle through this course. I would like to state that sometimes the information provided by Dr. Riley throughout some of these processes has not been completely correct. And I don't want to go into any further details because I'm glad that he has to acknowledge that he's going to improve his documentation and patient care. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I think we can move on now to our next case, which is case 2366, Sean Nguyen.
Yeah, that's my case, and I know that the complainant, Ms. Gallagher, is present, and Mr. Nguyen was present. Yep, I see him. Okay. So both the respondent and complainant are present. This is case 2366. The complaint alleged that Dr. Nguyen overbilled and or incorrectly billed for services provided on 10-1-22, and he failed to notify another physical therapist that she would be providing general supervision for the PTA when he left the facility. Dr. Nguyen reviewed the draft investigative report and confirmed the statements and findings in the report, and so subsequently did not submit a supplemental written response. The potential violations for board consideration include ARS 32-2044-6, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students or interim permit holders. In accordance with this chapter and rules adopted pursuant to this chapter, ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, and ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate records as it relates to R-424-304 adequate patient records. This case is for your review.
Okay, great. Dr. Nguyen, would you like to address the board?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say thank you to Mindy for taking the time to review all of this extensively, and for you guys for taking the time as well to review. And I'm just open for questions whenever we get to that point.
Great. And the person filing the complaint, is there anything additional that you would like to say? Okay. All right. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Nguyen?
Dr. Nguyen, what are some steps that you've taken to ensure that this situation doesn't occur again?
So I did take some continuing education courses on documentation. I realized that there was a mistake made with my billing where I plain and simply clicked the wrong button, right? So I charged for a reval when it should have been an evaluation charge. I'm also presently a part of a team within the system that is reviewing documentation and supervision, and we're making a system-wide education for the facility that I work on. Be honest, I don't see patients very often. I can think of maybe counting on one hand the number of times I've seen patients over the last year. So it's been slightly difficult to bring some of this stuff into action.
So you're more in an administrative role now?
Yeah, completely in an administrative role. Like I said, I can count on one hand that I've seen patients over the last year.
Okay.
Can I say something now? I've got my speaker on. Thank you for having the time. Thank you. I really am very passionate about feeling of the protection to the public, and this being a tip of an iceberg, in my opinion, after working with Banner for so long and the changes that DRGs went to observation and outpatients in a bed and the volume of bills that are getting generated directly to patients, that this sample of the documentation that I have showed, you know, within my ability to see timestamps and with what Mindy is able to have subpoenaed, that there is error and I think fraudulent abuse going on. And I think that, you know, the reason for not doing patient care now is because of this being brought forward, and that, you know, in the position of being a manager, which I used to be as well, you're teaching the others to follow your example, and in teaching to do co-treatments, which still go on frequently, and the billing and emphasizing, well, it's okay to co-treat if you're in an inpatient status and if you just need to make sure that it's not an outpatient in a bed. I think there are big problems here, and I appreciate your time bringing this forward and love the professionalism of listening to these meetings.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Dr. Nguyen, I read your response and you concede some of the allegations. Just for our ease, what issues do you concede? Do you concede all of the improper billings on, I think it was October 1st, or just the ones in your response?
I honestly can't remember my response, but concede to billing the wrong charge, right? So I billed a re-eval charge when it should have been evaluation charge. As far as supervising a PTA, the documentation supports that I did delegate for every single patient that he saw. And then the other one about co-treating, I did co-treat with a OT, but if I remember correctly, the billing charges were split, and I documented the wrong time out, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Nguyen, it's Dr. King. In your current position or as a manager, are you managing other physical therapists?
Yeah, I lead a team of 25 therapists in general. About 12 to 13 of those are PTAs. The rest are occupational therapists or speech therapists.
And so given this complaint and the things you concede to, do you believe you have adequate information and understanding of appropriate billing, coding, treat, documentation details as a supervisor?
Sorry, some of that kind of broke up.
Sounded like Dr. King was asking, do you feel like you have the knowledge of the billing and the documentation to actually be teaching that to the people that you supervise?
Yeah, I do feel like I understand the law and all those, whether it's supervision or co-treating or whatever it is, I truly made a mistake, and I'm humbled by this experience. But I do think I have the knowledge to continue to lead that team, yes.
So I guess one of my questions would be, how do you help ensure that your current staff is billing for the treatment that's being performed?
So I think you guys have in the report that we did a compliance education to the entire team after this was initially discovered. So we give that to them, and then we're doing routine chart audits. I'm in about anywhere from 2 to 4 charts a day, and looking at if there are issues or not. So.
Okay.
May I re-emphasize that there's, you know, fraudulent billing going directly to Medicare when there are not more than 23 minutes in a room and 2 units were billed, and that is needing to have, you know, further details brought to everybody's attention, which is in the documentation that I shared with Mindy, and more support from the subpoenaed information that we received.
If you can hear me, okay, my question is, you submitted a complaint to the Banner Compliance Department about your concerns as well.
I started this whole process with the Banner See Something, Say Something, and I did bring it to all of the compliance, brought it to their internal review person, showed the same timestamps that I showed Mindy, and yet they chose to end up retaliating against me and pulling up rules that I was the one who was not following Banner policies and, you know, requesting for time off. I was not given it off, got written up, and then it goes on for drama. But I want the focus to be here, that it's fraud going on, and I'm glad I'm not working for Banner, because it's hard to consider thinking of working for something that is unethical in its practices.
So I just want to, Dr. White, when at the time of the incident on October 1st of 2022, you were already doing some administrative work and you were kind of filling in that day to just help out?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so you hadn't been in direct patient care for?
Probably 2 to 6 months, give or take. Yeah.
Okay.
Doctor, do you know what happened with the charges? Were they ultimately billed or reversed or handled? Do you know what happened with those?
I do not know, no.
Any other questions?
Dr. Wine, is it pretty typical for you to be able to get a evaluation done in 6 minutes?
Depending on the course of action and what's going on with the patient, yeah. Yeah. If they're somebody that is highly independent, yes. If they're somebody that's highly dependent, I would say, yeah, there's potential for that, yeah.
Okay.
Unless it's been changed, the job description of this position is used to be 50% patient care, 50% a manager. I know there had been changes and he was doing more than that, but I truly believe he stopped doing patient care since the allegations that I brought up internally and then brought outwards to PT board.
Do we need more information? Or are we ready to? Make a decision here. You're very pensive there, Mr. Greer. Do you have a thought?
This is kind of a theme for me today. I don't know what the right result is here because, you know, here we have someone who acknowledges the issues, owns up to the issues. So I think there has to be something there. But at the end of the day, I don't think this is a very big deal. I don't think this is something that ruins careers. I don't think this is something that, I think any potential harm to the public in this case has already been mitigated, and resolved. And so I just don't know what the answer is here. I don't think this is disciplinary. I'm thinking somewhere between a letter of concern and non-disciplinary continuing education. But that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm thinking the same thing, you know, some sort of an education. But I do have a question for the PTs on the board. So I'm looking at the billing charges and I'm seeing, you know, 6 minutes of time to do a PT eval, 2 minutes to do a PT eval. 3 minutes to do a re-eval, which I think, you know, we've already been told that that was not the accurate charge. It should have been a regular eval. So now you look at that as 3 minutes to do an eval. I've never seen a PT be able to do an eval that quickly, but I've also not worked in inpatient. So is that something that is possible?
Can I make a comment on that?
Sure.
Yeah. I would say in the inpatient setting, it is not uncommon for you to be doing evaluation pieces and immediately move into treatment because of the nature of the inpatient setting, that it just kind of moves rapidly.
And yeah, and I would think that the lines get blurred a little bit too. Is it, you know, 6 minutes of an eval? Is it 15 minutes of an eval as you're doing some treatment? Are you evaluating as you're treating? I feel like some of the timestamps are probably less accurate than we would like them to be.
Okay. Well, yeah, that would be my biggest question was just on the time regarding the evals, because I don't know, it just seems crazy to think that can be done in such a short period of time.
And Kelly, what are your thoughts on that?
I hope I'm not breaking up. That is not necessarily uncommon to charge an eval, but often it's not necessarily a timed charge, and so then therapeutic exercise or activity or day training or whatnot is also charged in acute care. The time with the patient should equate to the correct number of units filled. And that's where the focus is. You can't bill for units when you were with the patient for 20 minutes. It's fast and furious in acute care.
Okay.
May I bring up, though, that time allotment in Banner's policy is only time with the patient. So they are doing it based on individual clinicians saying, this is the time I walked into the room, this is the time I walked out of the room. And yet, if it's 19 minutes, but they're charging 23 to get two units multiplied by 10 patients per day, and they're Med B patients that are outpatient in a bed having an orthopedic recovery for one session, they're being pushed so much for productivity, they aren't using a swipe on the patient's armband to put it as another entry into the computer, as other disciplines have to do with administering a med, and our billing is supposed to be the same across any board, that any practice setting, that it is your time with the patient that you can bill for. We can't bill for our documentation, and the eval charge is timed, but the treatment charges are all timed.
So, Giovanni, if you were looking at education specifically, what were you looking at?
I was looking at billing and coding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know that there are courses where they go over the eval codes, you know, what you should be doing underneath those codes, as well as all of the other, you know, going over the 8-minute rule.
Right.
Things of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that there are some basic premises that can be really gleaned from a course like that. We can't take on Banner as an institution by any means. But getting the people who work there to be as forthright as possible is a positive for sure.
Yeah.
So I would agree with you that a billing and coding class would be helpful. But I also agree with Mr. Greer that there's really not much else that's a problem at this time, and that most things do seem to be worked themselves out and taken care of.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, speaking of themes, I think the themes of you know, concern about the organizations has been consistent, and I think what we had to do is just make clear that, you know, it's the provider's responsibility, and I see a mistake here. I share Mr. Greer's concern that, you know, it's difficult to I think it's really difficult to draw a line here between what is an honest mistake and what is fraudulent. My take on this, given what I've seen, is that I don't, and it may be my lack of knowledge in this area, but I don't see any real financial incentive for the mistakes that we see here, which is kind of the defining difference in my mind. But you know, it's certainly a gray area that I struggle with. So, but I'd be inclined to agree with Mr. Greer.
I can take a shot at a motion.
Yeah.
So I would move that we order 3 hours of coding and billing education, or continuing education, with an emphasis on evaluation codes, 97,000 codes, as well as Medicare's 8-minute rule.
Second.
May I interject that the coursework doesn't necessarily specify what codes it kind of goes to? So finding that specific course might be a little bit difficult.
They have one in Medbridge that specifically goes over the 97,000 codes and eval codes and things like that. It's our Rick Gawenda course.
Okay.
Yeah, I've taken Rick Gawenda courses. There's other courses out there that are specific to what you, how you can build timed and untimed codes, code treats. So fortunately, there are quite a few courses out there on billing and coding, I believe.
For my clarification, would this be an additional 3 hours on top of my 20, or would it be lumped into my 20?
Yeah, it wouldn't apply towards your 20.
Okay, thank you.
So are you, Mr. Leone, are you talking issuing a non-disciplinary order?
Yes.
Is that the direction? Okay.
Yes, non-disciplinary order.
Okay. And the continuing education should be done in what time?
I'll say 3 months. 3 hours, 3 months should be okay.
And the coursework can be pre-approved, can be completed online and doesn't count towards renewal requirements, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the only education you're calling for at this point is the coding and billing for a minimum of 3 hours.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Close to you.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we can call the question, Judy.
In case 2366, Sean Nguyen, PT, it has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education in the areas of coding and billing, with specificity towards the 9700 codes and the 8-minute rule, for a minimum of 3 hours. Continuing education shall be completed in 3 months. The courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bastia.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Thank you. That motion passes.
Great. The board staff will help you with getting the pre-approval of the classes that you want to take. Dr. Wine.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Moving on. We are at our last initial review. Paul Kempton, case 2368. In the interest of disclosure, I did file a complaint against him in 2003. It was over 20 years ago, and feel that I can be impartial with the facts of this particular case. And so.
Dr. Bastia, before we proceed further, let's restart the recording, please.
Sure, absolutely.
We're going to stop the recording at 11:49.